The thing is, the good thing about Beasts of Nurgle is they're non-threatening.
Charge the ion accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined this evening by Adam Camilleri.
Hey everybody.
We're recording on a different day at a different time, and it's just Adam and I right now.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a schmozzle this week. I think Red's moving house. Tanya's, I think, working very hard. So yeah, it's just the, are we the OG yet? You know, me and you were doing episodes together for about 6 months, and then Red joined in and Tanya. But I mean, like, there's a whole OG school of OGs before you and I even started, yeah?
Well, look, I mean, we're ticking down time on this. I don't even know how much time we have for this show. So if it's a short episode, I apologize. We'll got some good stuff coming. Actually, on the YouTube channel, going to start releasing some player interviews out of folks in the UK done by somebody y'all might know. That I don't want to spoil it, but it's coming pretty soon.
Ooh, sexy.
I know.
First I'm hearing of it, actually.
I know. Hot off the press. I got an intro commissioned and got a couple of the first interviews in the can, going to release them. I'm actually looking forward to it. I don't know if they'll translate to audio. Maybe they will. Maybe I can pull the audio out and put them in the podcast. I'm certainly not trying to send people in different directions, but this is, I think, going to be neat. Getting some access to some folks that maybe we don't talk to every time or are on the regular.
Yeah, it's always interesting to get perspectives from other places on the game, on the competitive scene, if they're into it, on hobby, everything. It's just cool to spread our wings and involve as many people as possible.
That's it. Hobby tips, player interviews, perspectives. And of course, tournament talk and stuff as it is, but I think it's gonna be cool. I don't want to overplay it, but
overcommit.
Yeah, I think it is gonna be cool. So last episode, we mentioned we were going to talk about how to beat Drukhari.
Yeah, there's a bit to do talking about it, and this is something that's been covered, kind of not quite ad nauseum yet, but it's been covered in quite a lot of other places. But there is a lot of perspectives and a lot of conjecture about the best way to go about it. It's a multi-layered issue. Like it's almost like a fist, and you got to pry every finger off one by one before you figure out how to actually, you know, grab it, stop it from doing what it wants. And it seems to be empowered a lot by a lot of the terrain we've got going at the moment, which is, I think, is not a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. We have really high quality, very, very good standard terrain on most of our tables, but that is empowering this Drukhari build. It's giving them the ability to hide everything they want turn one. Like, I played against Drukhari armies who have like 7 raiders, and I can't shoot any of them turn one. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, because you know, we put our Thunderfire cannons away.
Yeah, we did. Well, G-Dub put them away for us. Like,
no one's taking mana cores. Guard is not present. I'll say no one's taking mana. Guard players are taking mana cores, but guard is not as prevalent.
It's exactly right. I can tell you that play-wise, like the Drukhari numbers of people playing Drukhari has gone up by from 6% to 8% to 10%. So 10% of all players at events are playing Drukhari right now, which isn't ginormous. Like, it's not like a third of all players like it was when, you know, the new Space Marine book came out and kind of everything. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, it's not Iron Hands. But in saying that, they're a thing you're going to have to face. If you conceivably think that you're going to be in a position to win an event, chances are you're going to have played or beaten a Drukhari player.
Yeah.
And so it's really a thing that a lot of people are touching on at the moment. Now, the things that they do that are incredibly good is they are faster than you. They're pretty much faster than everybody except probably Slaanesh Demons and Harlequins. They're on par with those two. Maybe Harlequins a little bit quicker because they got the double move. And maybe, you know, warp timing, Slaaneshi bikes are just as fast, but they're fast on like everything. You don't need a double move to make them quick. Now, what that means is that they can pick the engagements and that they can hide their weaknesses, which is their very low durability. Like, even the things that we're talking about, like Raiders, which is essentially like the most durable thing that they take en masse, is only toughness 6 with 10 wounds and a 4+ armor save. It's not very hard to kill, isn't it?
Yeah, and big too. So, I mean, like, if we weren't playing with these giant line of sight blocking things, you might get a beat on them, but we have.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, but we are. Well, they're very long, aren't they? They're very long. Yeah. So usually if you can get around the sides of these terrain pieces, usually you can see like multiple boats, which is very good.
Well,
so
it's like, you know, what's the thing you see in cartoons when they're standing one way, you see them and then and they stand the other way. You can't, they're invisible because they're so thin.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, they've been run over with the
the steamroller or whatever. Yeah. But so the first issue they have is that they're super quick, so which means usually means that they get to pick the engagements, or if you get to pick the engagements, they get to pick everyone else. Like usually a lot of armies, I know you play a lot of quick armies yourself, Paul, and usually you can send a unit of Death Company in turn one, but that unit of Death Company usually goes in unsupported by itself, does some good damage, and usually gets traded out.
It bleeds away. Yeah, you hope to trade for as much as you can before those figures are gone.
Yeah, exactly right. And then for the rest of the game, for the Blood Angels, you're using your 12-inch move, and then your 8-inch charges from reserve and stuff with a reroll is the kind of best you'll get. Whereas just about everything in the Drakari army can reach out and touch you from almost about 24 inches away. I remember having a bit of a shock. So I was playing a couple of Talon Masters, and I lined them up to shoot at a couple of Drakari boats. So 24 inches away is the range of assault cannons, if people don't know. So I was 24 inches away from everything in his army on the start, and I went first. I moved up, had my first turn. He did some stuff. He postured up behind a terrain piece. I moved up to 24 inches away. And then in his turn two, those two Talon Masters got charged by 6 units.
Gee, okay.
Yeah, 6 units, because they get out 3 inches, they move 7 on most of their things, or 6, or sometimes 8. And then some of them have +2 move combat drugs, so then they get out at 11, 12 inches from their transports, and then they, advance on top of that, so D6, and then they charge 2D6. So the threat ranges you really got to be worried about is kind of about 28 is where you want to kind of stay, engaging from 28 inches away.
Yep.
Is that something that your army can do? Invest in it. I think it's very good.
With their threat range being able to move as fast as they can, there's basically nowhere to get away. With the board, if you're, we're talking about playing in 2,000 points. If you're playing on smaller boards at smaller point levels, you basically have to have a turn one strategy on how to deal with them specifically that is different than how you deal with potentially other armies. Whereas, like we just talked about, like an army with assault marines or whatever, you're typically bringing one unit to bear. This is the whole army.
Yes, exactly right. And the whole, and so it's just very hard for you to protect things. One good thing is they are susceptible to conventional screens, like that you can just screen them out. A lot of their stuff doesn't have fly. It's not going to really jump your lines. So if you can put out cheap things just to kind of get in the way and speed bump them, that is a pretty good tactic. Things like Nurglings, things like Poxwalkers or Cultists or cheap stuff, which is a reason that that Space Marines actually struggle. There's no real cheap thing that Space Marines can just put out there and just let die.
Yeah, so the scouts moving to elites, those were previously the cheapest thing, and you could really zone people out. And now the cheapest thing that you're getting, I think, out of the troop section is something like 18 points a piece or something.
Yeah, on a tactical marine, and even those, like, that's if you're using two units of that to just stop Drakari, it's almost firstly, it's just really bad.
Well,
lot of your army.
So I know we're talking about how to eventually thwart them to maybe give yourself a leg up, and you don't necessarily, when you're sitting down to make an army, want to put these things in here that are just going to get ground up or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it takes a slight perception shift. You're not putting them in there to die. You're putting them in there to perform a function that enables the rest of your army to do things you don't play Drakari. They're still holding objectives. They're actions. You don't mind. You've already kind of got it in your mind that you're going to play them in a sacrificial type way, and it just enables. It opens up more strategies for you.
Exactly right. Now you're a big proponent of Incursors. You're actually quite a fan of Incursors, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. No. I do like
them. Yeah. And so traditionally we've always gone for Infiltrators over Incursors because they, while they're more expensive and they don't kill as well, they do block out the board. They deny the deep strikes and stuff. And all the deep strikes and all those shenanigans is not something Drakari does. So if you're going to just counter Drakari, Incursors have cost less points. They have more attacks in combat because they've got the stabby knives instead of, they actually have a combo weapon. Infiltrators don't. And they still have the same function of jumping forward and screening for you with the Infiltrate. So might be a little bit of a pivot for Space Marine players out there.
And that's where I think we're going to be, is like, what do you include in your list that you might not have been doing? I mean, for a long time, we talked about, Meltas and Thunderhammers. Yeah, I mean, I know Thunderhammers haven't been necessarily the hotness for a little bit, but Meltaguns certainly have. And Meltagun, when you're firing a Meltagun, it's something with an invulnerable save but could potentially never be in range for you to fire the Meltagun, then that's just not what you want to be bringing to that fight.
Yeah, so the metric. So I think a couple of months ago, I said, like, last 8th edition was the Plasma and Thunderhammer edition, and this one seems to be more like the Melter and the Lightning Claw edition. But even the Melters, like using a Melter gun to try and, you know, kill Raiders or Venoms and stuff, you're too close. You're way too close. We need to go back to the Heavy Bolters and the Auto Cannons and the Star Cannons and the Scatter Lasers and stuff to get to the back of the board.
Well, I think, you know, if you're going to be playing, like, you don't necessarily have to gear. Like, I'm not saying take 20 Heavy Bolters. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that you may want to switch up how you engage things. Like, if you know you're going to have to play through an armor company, you know, or something like that, or somebody's Deathwing Knights, First Company. Like, that's, you want melting, you may want for that, but you may gear it differently. Maybe you have to go heavier into things that can deal with chew them up in assault, and hope that you, and impact the damage 2, damage 3 range things with things at range 36, 24, 48 for the Drukhari, and then give up the melting guns.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe. And a lot of people are taking things like Eradicators or Plasma Scepters. I'm talking about Space Marines quite a bit here. I'll try and stop that in a minute.
Well, I mean, it's a big chunk of the game.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of people taking things like Demolisher Cannons on their tank commanders. A lot of people taking even Haywire Bikes in some ways are getting a little bit too close. Mind you, Haywire Bikes have a lot of other things going for them in that matchup. But even they're getting a little bit too close for comfort unless they're going in for a charge as well. And yeah, like it's actually a bit awkward. Like there are actually some armies that have the perfect profiles for combating Drukhari. And if you wanted to get people at home wanted to get an idea of the range of weapons that are really effective, Grey Knights have really good profiles into Drukhari. Essentially, you know, all the D3 damage and the high strength on the side cannons and the silencers having a bunch of shots that have D3 damage. And then just having like can get into like strength 5 and strength 6 on whatever they want, whenever they want, with good rend and no line of sight needed as well, gets around a lot of the issues there. Also, Tyranids. Tyranids have one of the best tools in the game for popping boats, and that being a Hive Guard.
Oh, because indirect fire is in the, what was it? It's like 36 inch range too, right?
36 inch range, can double shoot indirect fire. You take them as Chronos, so they're real ones for standing still. They're actually kind of perfect for it. And they're not something that you can just run a unit, like even a unit of Incubi doesn't just run in and pick up 6 Hive Guard. Like, you actually need to put significant effort into killing them. And they're quite, and Tyranids have the right units to sit in front and buffer them out, which is why I quite like Hive Guard. Maybe it's a thing where you see GSC coming back a bit as well, because GSC actually have really good profiles into them also. And I really want to highlight something for people. Tyranids have a thing called the Lash Whips. And Paul, do you know what Lash Whips do?
Still make you fight last?
It's fight on death.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you can actually just, are you going to charge 10 witches into these 10 guys with Lash Whips? Well, the 10 guys with Lash Whips get to kill you too. That's a really important thing, because the next thing that Drukhari does that makes them very powerful is they trade up. All their stuff's really cheap. Like 5 Incubi is not very expensive at all. It's like sub 100 points. Same as like 10 witches is only around 100-ish points, depending on what you give it. And they can go in, they can with CP or with positioning or Incubi, don't need anything, but they can usually kill something that's more points than them, sometimes double their points, sometimes triple their points in efficacy. Like, I've had 10 Blood Brides come into a unit of my Deathwing Terminators, and I've lost 7 of them. 7, Paul. Let me say that again. 7.
Okay. tell me how that works, because they're a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, so my boys are sitting with a 1+ armor save, 4+ invulnerable save, only 4s to wound, 6 up, feel no pain as well, and then -1 damage. None of those metrics matter, because the Blood Brides, they come in and they can wound beyond 4s if they've given them the +1 strength combat drug, but this guy was just going for bulk attacks. And so I think they had, I can't remember if they had 5 or 6 attacks each. I think they only had 5 attacks each, hitting on 2s, wounding on 5s, re-rolling. And then every 6 was taking me to my invuln save. And he just fished for 6s. He rolled everything, took out the 6s, rolled everything again, and took the 6s. And then that was, they're all just 4+ saves. In fact, they're 5+ saves if they make it through to my Lightning Claw guys. And then he attacked twice. So he popped CP because he was Cult of Strife to Reels to wound. And then he had fight again as well because he was a witch unit. And so that unit, yeah, came in. I can't remember if they had 5 or 6 attacks. Someone in the chat will tell us. But they came in with a minimum of 50 attacks, so attacking twice, 100 attacks, and he was able to make that my unit fight last with an Archon. And so, yeah, I didn't get he fought twice. I didn't kill much when I attacked back, and then he fought again. And, yeah, he was able to pick up 7, man. So it's pretty terrifying, and I didn't think he was going to be able to do it. he did have an Archon contributing as well because he gave me fight last, but the Archon only had a power sword. I don't think he did any wounds. So, yeah. I rolled pretty bad. He rolled pretty good. But that's just letting you know what just a troop unit for these guys is capable of doing.
I mean, it is... It's kind of an expensive troop unit when, because it's not that durable.
Mm.
And so if you if you are able to catch it out there, like you don't have chafe units or chaff units. You don't have expendable things in a Deathwing.
No, exactly right. You strip away all, there's no fat. There's no fat on the bone. It's just meat.
So I suppose he was able to bring his strength to your strength though. And it sounds like he was.
Yeah. On his terms when he wanted to, I lost. Which is fine. It's good. I had my day in the sun. I had a good month and a half where Deathwing was just insane. It's cool. And now we're moving on and things have changed. I think this is better. Because you actually get to interact with Drakkari. There are people that are saying, oh, they're as bad as Iron Hands were. They're nowhere near as bad as Iron Hands were as the opponent. Yeah. They're nowhere near as annoying. They're nowhere near as frustrating. Like when I played against Iron Hands, I felt like if I went first, I got to have one turn in the game.
Yeah. And you might have killed something.
And maybe I killed something that probably didn't matter. And then I lost. I instantly lost. Usually against Drakkari, I get ground out. And lose, and I'm in the game up until about turn three. And so it's a much more enjoyable thing. It's still not, you know, I'm not going to say, hey, let's all have a great time and play Drakkari. It's a lot of fun, but it's not as bad as what people are saying that it's as bad as Iron Hands.
I mean, there's, of course, a lot of chatter, and you can't, you know, when things are up on the internet, people are going to comment away, even if they don't have direct experience with some of this stuff. But I think, you know, we have a new things comes out. It's very powerful. People, we have this, one of the great things about the community and that kind of stuff is that you can talk about this stuff. You can talk about what the sweet combos are. Like it doesn't take long to unlock the combos.
Yeah.
And so it gets out there in the wilderness. But what I've noticed is no one's really talking about how to deal with it or to how to adjust every army to deal with it. And by the way, I'm also fine with there being just bad matchups. Like some things are just, you know, you have to play your way out of it instead of listing your way out of it. That I think I'm cool with that happening in the ecosystem out there.
Exactly right. I love how you said that as well. Playing your way out of a bad situation rather than just writing a list to counter it. And I mean, try and do both. You know?
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason to not try and do both. But there are some armies that really actually have a bad time. Like, you know, I mean, it's probably good for the game. The Space Marines are actually in a really bad place against Drakkari. We're still great against everything else, but against Drakkari, we actually have a lot of problems. And like I said at the start, the first one is there's nothing cheap that we're willing to just give up for free in order to get things on our terms. Anytime you do that as a Space Marine player, you're just losing. You're just losing. There's no way you can trade up into them. They trade up against you on their terms most of the time. You have to play like Raven Guard or White Scars or sometimes Blood Angels in order to have like enough speed and dynamics to play the same game as them, and then you just don't have as much stuff as they do and they end up winning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about this objectively though, is, you know, we mentioned terrain, like it is. What's happening right now is that we've got these, you know, like the common thing, especially when you're kind of mimicking your board terrain for certain tournament formats and that kind of stuff, is that you've got these lanes of fire, because when we talked about this, terrain's kind of like a pass-fail thing. Can I see it? Can I not? And so where we're kind of geared to have our tables to be where lots of things can't be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, the Drakkari, they either, if they go first, they just, or they go second, kind of blank your turn because you can't see to shoot them. And then they just leap over the terrain either because they fly or run really fast. Mm-hmm.
So one of the biggest things and the biggest ways that I feel like I can get agency is that a lot of Drakkari players pace the game to have a big turn two. Turn two is when combat drugs tick in and they get to advance and charge like across their whole army. So if I go first and get first turn, I get two turns of positioning and damage before I really have to worry about getting swamped. And so I've started to build lists that can run up, do a bunch of damage. E.g., what I really want to do is I want to get quick anti-tank things and then quick anti-infantry things that can both get up and get angles around these ruined pieces that can, you know, use the anti-tank to pop a radar, anti-infantry kills the stuff in the radar. And they're gonna hopefully be about, let's say, 18 inches away when they do this, so that they're pretty safe from reprisal. If I kill the closest raiders to them, usually the ones that are within 18 inches, usually they're about 20, 22 inches away, and I'm pretty safe for getting charged. And then in turn two, I get to run away and bubble up and try and screen them off from getting into me. But that's only if you go first. Then you get to have two turns. You get to run up, do some damage, and then leg it before you get caught. Yep. Which it's not always viable, but that's the kind of the thing I'm looking at in my head.
That sounds mighty perilous. I'm saying that.
That's a freaking lootly, man. But we know where it's at. It's a perilous place to be.
See, I'm thinking more of of, you know, really getting choosy with your secondaries. See if, you know, if you have to really examine if different secondaries become more attainable.
That's true.
Because you're having to play slightly more cagey. And again, this is only if you're running into this. The strength of the army is that it's deadly and it's fast. And it's got some kind of stealthy durability. It doesn't take, you know, but a little bit of luck to completely blank some of your turns. And in any time that's happening, you're basically, you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah. So some of them start looking a lot worse. I know banners is something that a lot of people rely upon as one of their most, you know, reliable things that they'll do. Banners is kind of a, unless you can actually zone off them from getting models onto objectives, like, you know, you got 100 poxwalkers or something, banners starts looking pretty bad because like turn one they can boot scoot raiders from one side of the table to the other. They can't get any guys out, like no one on foot can really close that distance, but one raider can, you know, move fire and fade and you know with a big advance and then just come all the way over and stand on your objective, stop you putting up banners, and then in, you know, preceding turns, they can just dive from their side of the table onto it. Stuff I do like now, though, I do like scramblers a bit more into Drukhari, and let me explain that, because people would be like, holy crap, that's a horrible idea. only if you can do scramblers with stuff on the table, like stuff that can double move, like, you know, you've got Harlequins that can double move into their zone and do it. You can't rely on deep striking stuff to do it, because they've got too many units. They can just screen that out. But if you can start on the table and run into quarters, run into the third to do scramblers, I don't mind scramblers that much. And the other one is thin their ranks. And do you know thin their ranks, Paul?
Yeah, it's, you get points for every time you, every model you kill, really, right?
Yeah, every 10 models is a point, or everything with every unit with 10, every model with 10 wounds. So every raider is worth a point, which is the same 1 point you were going to get from bring it down anyway, except that on top of that, every 10 witches you kill or 10 incubi you kill is also a point in addition. So I feel like thin their ranks and scramblers is two that I kind of like. Scramblers is only for specific armies, though. Scramblers is only for stuff that legitimately you can sling an infantry unit, and you know you have to use things like double moves or other KG modes to get that done. But I don't mind it that much, because one of the ones that they like to take a lot is Herd the Prey. Do you know about this one?
Hit me.
It's kind of a reverse engage on all fronts. They get 2 points at the end of their turn for every table quarter the opponent is not in, which is kind of bad, because it means like you're caught in this dichotomy of I can't push up to the Drukhari or I'll get absolutely like put through the mulcher, but if I don't push up, they actually have a secondary that I can just sit and get 4 points a turn on, essentially, you know, 2 to 4, sometimes 6, depending on the army. And so it's a very safe secondary for them that makes the opponent want to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah, this is one of their faction specific
strategies. Yeah, sorry,
score 2 victory points at the end of your turn for each table quarter that does not have any enemy units, excluding aircraft, wholly within it. This objective cannot be scored in the first battle round.
Yeah, the important thing there is that it's at the end of their turn that they score it, so they get the chance to kill you out of the quarter. So you can't just, you know, dive things in to deny it. They get a chance to respond, and that's what makes it kind of potent.
I like what you said a couple of minutes ago with getting the agency back, and that's where one of the worst experiences you can have in 40K is when you are just removing your models and you don't feel like you either understand why they're being killed or how you got yourself in that situation. You know,
I call it the fact, like, I relate it to fantasy dwarfs. I used to play ogres and you know, demons into dwarves all the time, one of my regular sparring partners. And I felt like he got to play the game and I didn't get to play the game. Like I marched at him and just picked up models. March, pick up models. And he was just like playing a different game to me. He was playing the stand, counter, shoot. And I was exactly right. I was just picking up models and I was like, how do I not get in this position next time? And that kind of feels like that way with, that's exactly what Iron Hands were, but it kind of feels like that way with Drukhari as well. But they're kind of the inverse of it. They're not going to sit on the other side of the table and just shoot you dead and stop you from playing the game. But they're going to come to you and mess with any plans that you try and make. Like, if you write down on your table banners, they're just like, well, you're just giving me something to mess with. If you write down, you know, engage on all fronts, well, you're just feeding me units. If you write down, while we stand, we fight, you just paint the targets upon those units, so to speak.
No, I think you're exactly right. And this is, they're a tricky army. I mean, they do have these abilities to do that, to feel like they're everywhere, to be doing things, to throw 100 attacks at you from seemingly out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make it sound like, oh, if you just played better, you'd beat them every time. That is not the case. They are an incredibly powerful army. These are just,
there is some
trying to think of ways, you know.
Yeah, there is something to that. So I'm going to, I've, I've I'm in a bit of a few stats channels. I got some access to brilliant gentlemen like Peter the Falcon and Joshua Diffie, who are just stats harvesters. And they'll tell you that Drakkari's win rate has gone down by a couple of percent because people have adjusted in some ways. They're still in the high 60s. Win rate. I think they're 68 or 69% win rate, which is too much still. We want to have a healthy, balanced meta. Everyone would sit somewhere between 45 and 55, yeah, which I don't think is where things are going to happen. I don't think we're ever going to get to that. We should aim for it and it should be a goal. But I think 45 to 60 is much more realistic of what we're probably going to exist in, or even 45 to 65. But they came down from, I think, 72, 73 down to 68, 69. That means that people do have the ability to hurt them.
Where you're getting these stats from, these are tournaments within something like BCP that are played within a competitive setting. So it's not a crazy number of games. These are games in a very specific thing.
Yeah, not only. So this is harvested. Usually the stats are harvested from Down Under pairings, Best Coast pairings, and the ITC battles. So the Battles app. Mm-hmm. So the Battles app is practice games. It's everybody's games. Anybody who just lodges a game in there, you can just be playing Joe Schmo in your garage, you know, your best mate, whatever. And so that's data collated from all of those things has shown a decrease. So at almost every level of the game where people are just chucking their scores into these things, from practice to, you know, the top end super majors and stuff, we're seeing a decline. But it's probably not going to decline much more, is I think the assumption. But the thing is, people have been able to take things in their armies to cut the gap a little bit. And I suppose that's what me and you were talking about, yeah?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Like, what can you do that doesn't completely open you to be beaten by other armies? I mean, you still have to take you can't completely gear toward to Drakkari. Although maybe you can. One of the strategies that I've always used when I'm making tournament list is that I need my list to potentially carry me through the later rounds. Like when I'm in playing against the players who have a win record. You know, they're 3-0 and that kind of stuff with stout list. I need a list that can hang with that stuff in the deeper rounds. Use my skill in the early rounds and less the list.
It's fair. Yeah, it's absolutely fair. Because like, you still need to get there. You still need to get in a position where you play against Drakkari. Because
you're playing for the win. Well,
The assumption is they're going to be winning. You have to be winning in order to play them. But there are some armies that do this very well. So I think this is a good time for Chaos. I was about to say this is a great time for AdMech, but AdMech's about to get a book. So I'm not going to speak to how good AdMech is here. I'll give you advice.
Some of those weapons they previewed sound pretty strong, though.
Sound fantastic, but you know, I'd be giving you hopes and dreams or, you know, old stuff. So we're going to dodge AdMech for a minute. Maybe talk about it next week when we're reviewing the codex, hopefully. Chaos actually has some really good tools into Drakkari. Death Guard being one of them, Death Guard being one of the ones that I think is actually quite good here. Where Dark Angels is weak, Death Guard is strong. Dark Angels have the same kind of durable elements that Death Guard have, but none of the expendable units that Death Guard does. Death Guard still has cultists, they still have Poxwalkers, which have just gotten hugely better from the Terminus Death Strike Force in Book of Rust, which I think is now a very, very legitimate way to play in this meta. Before Drakkari became crazy, people were just like, oh, yeah, might be good if, but maybe. Now I think it's almost the preferred way to go.
That is the list I'm running now is Terminus Death.
Yeah. The two things that they have is Poxwalkers.
You weren't supposed to tell everybody my secrets, but that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so Poxwalkers are extremely good because they are body blockers. They get in the way. They are annoying to remove because, you know, hell, if you swing and miss at Poxwalkers, it's actually really bad. They get some back when they kill you back, and then they res some, and then they get around you, they wrap you. They just get really annoying. On top of that, they get you a really good secondary, which is kind of what you wish banners was against Drakkari. So you like banners, you chuck on it, you go on an objective, you put up a banner, and then you're like, cross your fingers, you know, cross your heart.
You're talking about spread the sickness is what you're...
Yeah, you pray to the Omnicide, they don't pull down your banner before it gets you a point. Poxwalkers just walk onto objective, take some mortals, get you 3 points. They're in the bank, can't be messed with, they're there.
Yeah. You don't have to do that with Poxwalkers, but one of the things is that it hurts you when you do it. If you just choose to automatically pass, then you take mortals, and they have a way of mitigating or getting models back or bringing the whole unit back. So you're kind of incentivized to do it with them.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, the other thing that they have that's really, really good here is Death Shroud. Now, Death Shroud have kind of every Drakkari killing benefit you could probably have. With the exception of their gun not being able to kill a raider, but you know, can't have it all. They've got.
But if they're in gun range, they're pretty much in scythe range, and so
it's true. It's damn true. So they're hard to charge because of the guns. They're hard to lock up, like as in, let's say you put 30 witches into them because you're like, oh wow, that's a scary unit, 30 witches in there, and then they let's say the scythes whiff. They still got pistols. That flamer on their wrist is still a pistol. Shoot it into combat, phenomenally good. They're -1 damage, which means they're very safe from things like the liquefiers on the racks that have 2 damage, and from incubi. And then furthermore, they have the huge amount of attacks from the scythes when they go for the multi damage.
You go for the sweep or whatever it is, yeah.
Exactly. 2s when they do that. They have every benefit to killing Drakari that you can possibly have, except from having like maybe a melter shot, which would just make them ridiculous. But really, really, really good.
Yeah, that's the scythe profile. And each time an attack is made with his weapon profile, make 2 hit rolls instead of 1, giving 8 to 10 attacks on the champion.
Yeah.
It's 8 attacks for a normal guy, 10 attacks for the champion.
Well, yeah, exactly. I really like, so what I'm really liking is 4-man Destriad units. Some people take 2, some people take 3, some people take 6s. I like the idea of 4-mans. Just because, like, let's say you get charged by 10 witches and they kill 2, you know, through whatever means, by shooting or charging, whatever, 2 die. 2 Destriad is enough to kill 10 witches back. Theoretically, between, you know, and then between their size in one turn and then the shooting phase, and then they can kill them in that turn, and then they can charge off and do something else. They don't get a movement phase, unfortunately, but is what it is. You can't have it all. And I feel like they're a stupendously good unit into this meta at the moment, into this environment, into this kind of phase of the game, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I think they're absolutely great. They're a ton of points, but you get a bunch with it. You get 3 wounds, 2+ save, 4+ invulnerable save. Which, because they're the older variant of the Terminator armor.
Yeah. -1 damage in addition, and -1 toughness to anything coming in as well. So all those toughness 3 units go down to toughness 2 each year. They get wounded on 3s from the flamers, which is
that's the
nice
army ability you're talking about. That's not specifically to Deshroud, though. Just
apologies.
In case anybody's doing the math at home.
Yeah, fair. But there is a case for, if you're Chaos, for splitting up and mixing things up a bit. Because like I said, that minus toughness thing doesn't matter that much. You still wound them very well, very reliably with things like Deshroud. And there's a couple of other things that Chaos have that are very difficult for Drakari to deal with. One of those things being Beast of Nurgle is a very good example. And that's literally just being like, hey, I'm going to take so many wounds with high toughness. Doesn't kill that well, kills okay, but so much toughness and so much wounds that I'm just going to be able to exist and get points, you know? And that's how that's just such a big deal to close the gap, because so many things that you need to put on objectives to get points just get picked up.
Yeah.
So just having something that can just go on an objective, even if it's not OBSEC, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, fair enough, because they still have to come over there and deal with you, and if they can't, I mean, but I think they will. They'll outnumber you. I don't know if I want to put all my faith in Beast of Nurgle.
Well, so here's the thing about Beast of Nurgle, though. The bases are gigantic.
Okay,
they're
fair.
Freaking huge. And what you do is you put it so you can place them in such a manner, a unit of 4 or 5 of them can almost body block out an objective, or body block it in such a way that they have to be in combat with you to get it off. E.g., you get to attack them, you get to have a say in them holding the objective.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I've been kind of doing similar things with Chaos Spawn. You know, they're just on the 40mm bases, but you can get a unit of 5 of them, and people, you know, have to kind of deal with them. And if you give them the Grandfather's Blessing, then they get the damage reduction and
perfect.
You know, the extra toughness and stoids.
I enjoy prime example. Yeah. Same things. Plague drones are essentially the same thing. Cataphron breaches and destroyers for AdMech are essentially the same thing, except they get OBSEC, so a bit better. But, you know, they're a bit more incentive to kill them. The thing is, the good thing about Beast of Nurgle is they're non-threatening, you know? They're not going to reach out and kill something on the other side of the board.
They look so friendly. That's actually true. They're designed to look friendly.
They're designed to look friendly. They're designed to be disarming. I wish the design team looked at me like, we need to make it less threatening. They've got it written on drawn on a whiteboard. I'm like, yeah, let's give it a smile. There we go. Fine, everyone laughs.
He's waving. They're waving. So,
yeah.
Wait, howdy, neighbor.
Exactly right. Things like that. Yeah, it'd be really, really cool. I would love. Yeah, maybe there's a whole. Maybe someone could do a wholesome trio of Beast of Nurgle for us. Someone send in a picture. I want a Bob Ross Beast of Nurgle with like a little fro. And a paintbrush. I want a Steve Irwin Beast of Nurgle with, you know, he's just given like a thumbs up, maybe, you know, whatever. And what was the gentleman, the neighbor, hello neighbor?
It's Mr.
guy?
Rogers. Yeah.
Mr. Rogers. And a Mr. Rogers. So maybe he's wearing a tartan jumper or, a, you know, just sitting pleasantly with his legs crossed.
I'm glad you're talking about Poxwalkers, because they have been not necessarily in fashion for a while, but I think they are kind of uniquely suited very well. And I don't know if we mentioned the fact that they ignore the morale phase.
So yeah, they exactly
right.
You've
incredibly cavalier with them.
So same thing with Termagants as well. You've got to kill them to a man. You're not shifting them. You're not making them run away. And Dark Elder have a lot of stuff that manipulates morale, that makes the morale phase kind of worse for you at points. And they can sub in things like Harlequins that can double down on making your morale phase bad for you. Taking things like, hell, Termagants, Fearless Termagants, Fearless Poxwalkers is actually not a bad idea. If I could take Fearless Conscripts, I might. You know, I can take Pitriovs or whatever his name's pistol, or you can just recommissar the conscripts and make them stick. Might not be a horrible idea if you can give them some kind of decent save, because witches will just go straight through them, because they've got rend 1, rend 2 on 6s, e.g. no save for the guardsmen. But you can take things like Custodes with the 5+ Invuln banner to bolster that up a little bit, or things like Inquisitors who have a spell to give them invuls as well. So there's a couple of different things you can do there to get some mileage out of these things. And I like that we're coming back to needing to have blobs, but not, we don't need hordes. We're not going for like, hey, you know what, we'll fix this 300 XYZ. We're not quite there yet, which is nice.
You also mentioned, I don't want to jump around too much, but with Chaos in general, they still have all the war gear options and flexibility that Marines have. Death Guard don't. Death Guard are a little bit more set into what they can take, but regular Chaos Space Marines have the ability to kind of craft towards things. And, I mean, could Noise Marines be okay?
Yes, they can. But the issue with the... So Noise Marines are very good. So there's a couple of things that Noise Marines do that make them exceptional here. Of course, you know, they've got a bunch of shots. They can double shoot. They can... And here's the one, the very special one. They can redeploy. A lot of people don't know that Emperor's Children Noise Marines get a redeploy stratagem. And it's so, so powerful here, because you get to have them on the backboard, like in a non-threatening position, see who goes first, and then try and put them somewhere to get a line of sight, get an angle. But I'm going to dodge Noise Marines for a second, okay. And I want to talk about Empress Children Bikers, just plain old bikers with a couple of melter guns. So some things you can do here. They are the perfect unit. Remember the unit I talked about before? I want a anti-infantry unit and an anti-vehicle unit that can go up, pop a vehicle and kill the contents. They can do that times three. So you put prescience on them, you warp time them to get them up to get an angle wherever they need to be. And then, you know, they move a bunch of inches, you get an angle, you put two melters and a combi melter
that's
in there.
28 inches of just base movement with a warp time.
Of just base movement. Yeah. You give a bunch of them chain swords as well. You've got 6 melter shots to pop a boat, essentially, because you double shoot. If you do it with the first three, then the bolters get to eat the contents of that first raider when the melters shoot off to go into another one. But just the bolter shots, like 3 melters and a bunch of bolter shots, let's say it's a unit of 9 bikes, that'll kill a raider. No problems. No stress whatsoever. Veterans of the Long War, that'll pop a raider just about every time. And then you get with the double shoot, you get to kill the contents. Or better yet, you kill one boat with the first round of shooting, one boat with the second round of shooting, charge in and kill them both as much as you can in combat. And that, I think, is actually a really nice bit, really nice unit. Now, there's a couple of logistical things you have to do here. Like the range of warp time is very small. So you need to have a sorcerer that you don't mind using and maybe losing for this first use, or you have to be crafty in how you string back and maneuver things and get your ranges and positioning spot on.
Yeah, I think it's 6-inch range.
It's small, yeah. Yeah. It's either 6 or 8 or 9. It's really short. So you're pretty much chained to that Psyker, and you have to guarantee that goes off. So a lot of people like to take
jump axe. It's not hard to get it.
It's true. Yeah, it's true. But the problem is losing that guy next turn because he's so exposed.
Oh, yeah. No, he would definitely be dead, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Which is where something like your unit of beasts of Chaos Spawn come in, because they come in and they wrap that guy, keep him safe, and then they're the second wave that gets sent in to clean up. And so a unit like the Chaos Bikes might be a lot more appealing to people now, because it's something that starts on the board no matter where you are with warp time. It can get an angle. You can take a Word Bearer's Sorcerer to guarantee you get that warp time off. And apart from the Helm of Spite and a couple, maybe there's something else I don't know of, there isn't really any way for Drakari to interact with your opponent's psychic phase. So stacking the psychic phase, which is the same reason that I think Grey Knights are quite good here, because they have a phase there that gets no interaction from their opponent, it's probably a good idea. If you can have an army that can have a reliable psychic phase, it's probably a good meta to do it in.
Yeah, fair enough. And then the Grey Knights also, I mean, the Gatling Silencers
Oof, yeah.
I think they do everything you need them to do in this situation, including multi-damage.
Yeah, they do everything you need.
One of the things they suffered from is not being very high strength at all. I think it's strength 4 or something.
Strength 4 and no rend. But you can pump the strength pretty well. I think you get into, I'm not sure if you get into strength 6. You definitely get into strength 5. I know you get Stormbolt as a strength 6. So I'm assuming you can get strength 6 on the silencers as well. But it doesn't matter because you've got enough shots. And the rend doesn't matter because things like raiders and witches have, you know, no armor. They've only got 4+ armor on the raiders, and you got so many shots that doesn't matter. You're still pumping through. There's a litany for extra range should you need it. There's also a litany for extra range should you need it, and then there is cyborg ammunition to double down on that.
Well, then and also so being able to ignore the fact you don't have line of sight.
Exactly, astral aim as well. So you can astral aim with like real impunity against Drakari. The issue is though, like, so they don't have a couple of things that they don't do quite as well. In the pop the raider, kill the contents kind of thing, because you only really get one unit that's going to get astral and it's going to be able to see whatever it wants. So that unit pretty much just goes, okay, half's going to kill this raider, half's going to kill that raider, and I'm just going to try and demech you as fast as possible. I'm not going to try and address what comes out of the boats. I'm just going to try and pop all the boats ASAP.
I kind of argue though that the Grandmaster Dreadknighter has the all the tools necessary, has the ability to get up there close, has the ability to kill a raider, and then has the ability to get in there and mop up.
It's true. That's true. Actually, it's quite true. You can shunt him up. You can gate him up. You can do a lot of things like that. So maybe, yeah. Actually, wait a second. Interceptors. They have interceptors. Yeah, they can just shunt. You can just start them on the board in first turn. Just kind of self gate, don't they?
They do. Yeah.
So that's the thing. That's the thing you use to get the angles. Maybe some 5-man of those, because I still got 4 Stormbolters. You pop a raider with witches. They just shunt over. You know, 20 shots with Stormbolters maims that unit of witches to a level where you don't really care about them anymore. Maybe there's something to that.
Grey Knights make it their time here.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, if Grey Knights had their extra wound now, if Grey Knight Paladins, you know, Terminators had 3 wounds, Strikes and things like Interceptors and Purgations had their second wound already, I'd be like, they're the best thing we got into them. But as it is right now, they have the issue that they when Drakari trade up on them, they trade up so much easier. Like you can't just, so if I had like 10 intercessors and you know, a bunch of witches or hellions or whatever came in, I could just pop a bunch of CP, you know, maybe I've got a 6-out feel no pain, which Grey Knights don't have, or, you know, transhuman, et cetera, whatever, or Gravis armor for +1 save against, you know, single damage stuff, which is a lot of things. Then all of a sudden all my wounds matter a lot more because they're going through another defensive modifier. I suppose like things like paladins have that advantage, and they do still have transhuman, but it's transhuman on just less wounds, like just less wounds for transhuman to matter. But still, yeah, Grey Knights, don't be sleeping on Grey Knights, guys. They're in a sweet spot right now. I like them a lot.
I mean, I think they'll struggle. Again, this is one of those things that if you're a Grey Knight player and you're making an end around 3 undefeated, you got a good shot going all the
way.
You're
already a legend. Like, you're already a champ.
Well, I mean, fair enough. And I know we're barreling through some of these options, but I thought it was nice to kind of take a little bit of time to talk about how several armies may be able to shift just a little bit of their thinking. I don't think you have to shift anything with it's basically with the Death Guard. You just kind of got served up something cool with this Terminus Est army.
There's 2 more I want to talk about, and then I'm probably going to have to peace out. But okay. Orcs. I want to talk about orcs. Orcs have some really good tools in Drakari. The fact being, like, any bog standard unit of 5 orcs can pick up any Drakari unit bar a raider, you know? And, you know, if it's knobs or mega knobs, they can probably do it. But I am very high on truck boys. I'm going to a teams event this weekend. There's a gentleman bringing, I think, 5 or 6 units of just 10 boys with some kills with the killsaw knob and tank buster bombs in a truck. He's got like 6 or 7 of those. And I think that is sick. I think it's awesome. So a couple of things that they can do. They can do the drive-by in the truck, as in the truck charges you and then the contents of the truck get 1 a swing each into the thing. So the truck rams into the raider, and then the contents, everyone inside gets a swipe into the raider. It's pretty cool. You can also disembark the unit, and then you pay the CP that everyone gets to throw a grenade, and everyone has a tank buster bomb, which is a strength 6, -2 or -3 D6 damage weapon. And then you more DAC of that unit, and they'll pop a raider or 2 by themselves. And then in combat, they can charge and they can do the same thing. I think it's very clever by this gentleman. I think it's something that people might be sleeping on. Crack out the trucks, crack out the boys, see if it's got some legs, guys.
Hey, that's stuff that people have. If you're playing, I mean,
straight it is, man. Yeah. And the last one I want to talk about is actually Craftworld Elder. So a lot of people have been maligning Craftworld Elder. I've been sleeping on them a bit, saying, oh, they're nowhere. They've got nothing.
I hope you're going to say star cannons.
I was going to say star cannons. They've got, well, so I'm going to say a lot of guns. They have a lot of very good profile guns. They might not have cheap or efficient platforms. Like, I think, like, night spinners are incredibly good here. They got 2d6, strength 7, no rend, but 2 damage. Rend on 6s to wound is massive rend. Extremely good profile popping boats. They're overcosted right now, but, you know, still paying their penance. Things like Falcons with expert crafters, they've got some very good damage, pulse laser shots, etc. Things like Warwalkers with star cannons and scatter lasers or missile launchers, exceptionally good. Same goes for the Wraith Seers and the Wraith Lords. So there's actually a lot of things that they can take that will do and take a pound of flesh. I'm actually secretly still thinking Shining Spears are really good here, and Windrider bikes, either Shuriken or Scatter Lasers. Scatter Lasers, because they're so quick, you'll be able to get the angles you need from the back of the board to pop boats. And Shining Spears, because they have the same kind of inherent durability in combat against, against things like the Dark Lancers. You can't really shoot them down with the Dark Lancers, which is kind of the only real shooting that the meta builds are bringing, apart from stuff like the Raquifiers. But hopefully with your quick movement, you get to stay out of the Liquifier ranges. But yeah, you love Star Cannons, don't you, mate?
With Star Cannons, I mean, you get a consistent number of shots and you get pretty reliable damage.
Yeah, there's strength 6, good rend, good damage, and strength 6 is all you need. Wounds everything that's on the foot, bar like Hellions on 2s, and the boats on 4s, and takes the boats to their invuln, no matter what their invuln is at the time. I think Star Cannons are really good. I think Scatter Lasers are really good. I think Shining Spears have a place now, and I think people are sleeping on the fact that, I don't know, did you know this? Like, and this, a lot of people were still unaware, Dire Avengers and Guardians are actually not overcosted anymore. They're actually decent for their points now.
Why are you saying that? Well, I mean, I've never thought they were overcosted, by the way. I mean, I think that when you were taking them, they do perform a function because they get different unit sizes. You got decent reliable shots. All the stratagems hang on them. You can do it. I think they're good.
Yeah, I think they're good now. They went down in points in the latest updates, and they're actually well priced now. I think we might. I do not mind a unit of 20 guardians now. You remember what they used to be able to do with that? Crazy amount of damage you can get a unit of 20 guardians to do.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If they're Ulthway, you can make them hit on 2s, you give them 4+ invulnerable save, you can give them fortune to give them a 5+ feel no pain, blah, 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 blah. But 40 shots with Doom and Jinx can just kill most of anything that Drakkari have, if not 2 or 3 of anything Drakkari have. On top of that, they can be pretty durable in return, surprisingly durable in return. I'm pretty sure you can get them up to a 3+ invuln with a 5+ feel no pain, -1 to hit, if not -2 to hit with lightning fast. It's pretty saucy, and you can take a couple of star cannons on there as well if you want.
In the weapon platforms?
Yeah. And that's a very good thing for holding a couple of mid-board objectives, because you can't just walk in a unit of Incubi and just kill it. You know, you make the Incubi hit on 3s or 4s, and then, you know, they'll wound on 2s or 3s, depending if Drazar's around, and then you just halve everything with a 3+ or a 4+ invuln, and then halve it again with the 5, or take a third off with the feel no pain. And all of a sudden, they have to expose a lot of their army to try and dodge that unit or shift it, and they still might not. They still might swing and a miss, and then you get to do all the responding things, which is where I like Shining Spears to come in, because they've got the right guns to not only with the Heat Lancers to pop the Raiders because they're strength 6 and all the negs and the flat 2 damage on them, but they also have, you know, essentially 4-shot a double Shuriken catapult as well. So they kill the ground stuff really good, they kill the mech stuff really good, and then they're actually, sorry to say, they're the only melee unit that's worth taking right now for Craft World Elder. Like, apart from Wraith Lords, Wraith Seers, they're the only kind of melee unit that stands out in any way.
If you call them the melee units. Hey, but listen, look, I know we're pressed for time, and this could be a short episode, but we're short-staffed, and thanks for everyone for listening to us. I'm going to wrap up with a word from our sponsor, then close us out for the week. We'll be back next week.
Good night. Thanks for listening to everybody. A torrent of information. Hopefully some of it was useful. Good night.
Well, I think, you know, look, there's going to be a lot. You know, you got to listen quick for the army that you play.
The main
takeaway that I want to continue to stress is that it is an absolutely powerful army, and it's hit the tables by storm, but sometimes we have to look at what we have to do if we want to up our win percentage instead of necessarily what we might particularly want to do. It might mean we have to paint another unit. It might mean we have to sub out some war gear.
And it's a real tenet of what you try and do on this show, is looking at the positives, looking at the things you can control. You can't control how powerful Drakkari is. You can't control if they get FAQ'd or points deductions, all that stuff. You can control what you take in your army and how you play on the table. And so that's what Paul always directs me to point out.
All right, folks, we will see y'all next week. Thanks, Adam.
Good night. Take care.
except tenets demand you tune in next week. For the greater good, of course.